chapter 2. Now I know I'm being used. That's okay, man, 'cause I like the abuse. Self-esteem by the offspring. Johnny paced around his kitchen, heat rolling under the collar of his shirt. He and Janet built to this moment for months. He'd always noticed the way other men noticed Janet. It was hard not to look at her. She was long and lean, pert and tan, with elfin features and cocoa curls lifted by sunlight. Her looks, go-getter attitude, and casually flirtatious remarks made her irresistible. They'd rock climb and hike, and she'd help him limber up before and after sets. That was how they met. Janet was a physical therapist for the team. They brought her in after Calvin severely sprained his ankle. There was instant chemistry between Johnny and Janet. Their first date was over a couple of ice cream cones. He proposed in 6 months and they married exactly 1 year after meeting. Janet's fully Italian mother bawled throughout the ceremony, weeping into the slice of tiramisu she'd made for the wedding. But other men never stopped noticing Janet. For the first couple of years, they couldn't keep their hands off of each other, so it never bothered Johnny. Then, they fell into a routine. Their schedules kept them apart, and all of their interactions seemed rote, mechanical. He'd become what he thought was jealous. He knew she wasn't unfaithful, but she seemed to have more fun with strangers than with him. They mended that rift gradually as they took vacations and played doubles tennis. Their conversation wasn't the same. When it seemed like things were most the way right again, he dreamt of Coach Earl Bruce calling Janet into his office, locking the door, and railing her. Johnny sat in the chair outside, listening to everything as he read the paper. He was as hard as he'd ever been when he woke up, feeling vivacious and like he could charge up Mount Everest in his shorts. He woke Janet up and they had some of the best sex of their lives. She asked what had gotten into him. He was embarrassed, but she coaxed it out of him. To his permanent shock, Janet wasn't mortified or disgusted at all. She heard his story with that telling crease in the center of her forehead, her right brow pushed in more than the left, coyote smile on her face. Janet was quiet for only half a minute, then she started asking questions. Did he think he'd like the idea of her with other men? Not with the coach, the man was a legend, but he wasn't much to look at. Maybe the players, though. Johnny didn't have any answers. Janet teased him by degrees, mentioning which of the team looked best and which of the other coaches, which of the parents she imagined hoisting her up and pinning her against the wall, which of them would take her while they locked eyes with Johnny, letting him know he was nothing. That was when domination crept into their dynamic. All that talk made him surge with vitality, but Janet liked flexing her control. She'd rile him up and bring him to a boil, deny him but keep him at a simmer. It was tantalizing. It was electric. The more she pushed the boundary, the more he wanted her to. A few months ago, she had her first affair. A one-night stand she told Johnny all about. She recounted every detail, knowing it'd bring him to a fever pitch. She once left the phone off the hook so that Johnny could hear another man satisfy her. He'd never felt so alive. A couple of weeks ago, she chained him to the bed, left him handcuffed and forgot about him long enough to work through a Pilates routine and take a long bubble bath. Now James Motor called and left a brazen message on their machine. Janet would come home Tuesday night and they'd bring James in the day after. It was close now, almost too much to bear. He might as well have been a bottle of Coke put through the spin cycle. Johnny went upstairs and showered off, not wanting any relief. He stood under the freezing water and stared at the terracotta brown tile. He ran his fingers along the grout until he cooled down. Better to let it all build, like a pressure cooker, and wait for Janet. Maybe he'd look normal by the time she came home. After a shower, a shave, and a couple of glasses of water, Johnny looked better, but something was off. He figured standing under the shower head would flood his eyes and bring down the scratchy inflammation, but the pressure stayed. At times, he noticed a faint static web over everything that pulsed and disappeared. He changed into a faded Stevie Wonder t-shirt and a pair of boxers. Then he let his blue Doberman pincher, Laurel Hardy, out from the basement. Johnny didn't remember putting Laurel there, but Laurel's dopey smile of welcome and cropped propeller tail buoyed Johnny's mood. He hugged Laurel loosely about the neck and decided to let him sleep in the master bedroom for the night. Mounting the stairs used up the last of Johnny's strength, and he half sat, half slouched on the lip of the bed as he pet Laurel and his eyes trained on the only painting he owned. A beach during a thunderstorm, white sand overlooking dark waters and darker skies, the horizon almost black, but two clusters of lightning cracked the pall of the storm. It was a piece Johnny couldn't take his eyes off of. The clouds churned when he looked at them, and the lightning surged, the painting more animate than ever. But reacting was exhausting. Johnny didn't know how long he'd slept at the hospital, but it hadn't been long enough. He fell back into the bed, wet hair leaving a damp halo against his pillow. Johnny was awake at 6 so he could be at the stadium for 7 o'clock train. The boys laid back on the field and went through dynamic stretches to warm up. Rows of young men balanced on their upper backs, legs bicycling in the air to work their muscles and stretch out their lower spines. They worked through entire varied circuits to keep the players focused on their exercise. Problem areas were targeted. A tight end that didn't pass deep enough last game focused on strength training in his biceps, triceps, deltoids, and obliques. They focused on his form and follow-through, doing practice throw, run after run. A defensive lineman that hadn't been able to keep the offensive line away focused on his quadriceps, glutes, and abs. They needed his center of gravity low. They needed him to plant like a tree. The idea was to train these areas hard, then let up on the strength train in the last couple of days so that their muscles had time to heal. Players that needed to bulk up had their diets tailored to them. They were always trying to get more protein into the boys. Chicken and eggs, mostly, since they were lean and low calorie. They were still figuring out how to work lentils and legumes in for fiber. Problem was, it made the players gassy. No one wanted to stand downwind of a bunch of gassy fucks doing on their back bicycles. He needed to talk to Janet about solutions. She was a physical therapist, but she made her patients diet part of outcare. She might know a trick about degassing the legumes. When they broke for weight training, Eric Bailey approached Johnny as the other boys filtered into the gym. He was a young, mixed man in peak shape, with a proper Christmas tree build and springy cinnamon curls that brushed over his ears. Bailey was a tight end and fell directly under Coach Hazard's niche. Tight ends and tackles. Johnny taught the boys to be rough, aggressive, and sometimes even tricky on the field. Football was a great American sport because it emulated warfare. Lines were drawn, territories were held, a mixture of infantry and officers decorated the field. Every play was about achieving an objective, and like warfare, plans rarely survive first contact with the enemy. It probably had to do with that hunter-gatherer instinct humanity had only recently shaken, that need to struggle and overcome something as a unit, with tangible stakes to tap into fight-or-flight physiology. Another part of him thought it was about flexing that developed American muscle, which functioned to assert dominance and superiority. He never decided. Bailey didn't help as his personality bridged the two options. He walked with a strut through rows of machines, clapping biceps, nodding, and shaking hands as he passed some of the other players. The kid was talented, good-looking, and smart. The perfect storm to justify one hell of an ego. He rode in on an athletic scholarship, but not out of necessity. Eric was majoring in entomology and had the kind of memory recall that meant he didn't need to do much studying. He fell back on natural talent more often than not, a tendency Johnny warned him could get him into trouble. There wasn't much substitute for discipline.
"Look, I'm just saying I think Arsados needs to throw me the ball more,"
Bailey said as he strapped himself onto the inversion table. He swung upside down and started to work his core with Russian twists.
"Coach Bruce runs a tight ship. I'm not trying to throw off the team and get the ball all the time, but I don't fumble. And I rush as good as anyone. I deserve a chance to shine. I'm a junior now. Scouts need to be able to take notice."
Johnny scratched the underside of his chin where he'd missed some stubble. Bailey was right. Johnny had been advocating for him for a while. He cleared his throat and moved closer to Eric.
"Coach Bruce doesn't think you're serious about football. He thinks this is all an ego trip for you and that your heart's really with moths and beetles and butterflies."
Bailey snapped the table back up so he was lying flat, his hazel green eyes flashing as he sat up. His freckles were more pronounced when he was close like this and red in the face.
"That arrogant?"
Eric stopped short,
but Johnny wasn't sure if it was out of respect for Earl or because Johnny stood taller as soon as he sensed a critical word toward the coach.
He can't decide my future for me.
Yeah, I like what I'm studying. Fucking sue me.
I think I should be able to decide whether or not I go pro. I wouldn't mind doing a few years in the league, especially with that salary. Entomology can wait.
I agree. The choice is yours, and you have the talent to justify it. I'll see what I can do, but plays against Indiana are mostly locked in.
Thanks, Coach. I'm only asking for that chance, you know? We're still on for next Sunday, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Bailey managed a brief smile and flipped the table upside down, returning to his core circuit. After Johnny made the rounds through the gym, he met with the other coaches to strategize for Saturday night's game at West Lafayette. The process of opposition research, watching Indiana games, and drafting plays was on. Now they were going over their playbook as they watched Indiana's game from the weekend. Everyone talked over it every time they paused to fast forward. An early season game against the Hoosiers wasn't as high stakes as future games would be. Johnny thought he might have some leeway with securing Bailey play. But Johnny didn't get the chance to advocate. The coaches spent too much time on tangents. Coach Bruce talked about his daughters, and the other coaches started talking about their kids, and Johnny felt like the odd man out as he waited for his chance to say his piece about Bailey. The opportunity never came, but early in the week was usually a bit more relaxed. They broke for an extended lunch until their practice game at 1500. He came home around 12:20 and changed into sweatpants and a muscle shirt and rolled on a fresh layer of Old Spice before he freed Laurel from his weekday captivity. Laurel's ears perked up when Johnny took the leash off of the closet's coat hook, but he sat tall and statuesque like a Buckingham Palace guard. Johnny clipped the leash to his collar. Then they were off for a 30-minute run, composed of several laps down the Wahala Ravine, where broad-leafed deciduous trees stretched toward the sky and inspired everything under their canopy to reach their heights. Johnny chugged water from a steel bottle as they ran laps down the one-way road, Laurel running alongside him. A couple of neighbors greeted them on their run, but he only offered a wave and a hello so that he could keep his heart rate high and put his anticipation towards something productive. Then he was back inside, leaving Laurel out long enough that the dog got to watch Johnny make a salad he didn't want and marinate steaks he couldn't have. Johnny apologized, promising him table scraps, and once dinner prep was done, he returned Laurel to the basement as per usual. Laurel was a perfect gentleman when his people were nearby, but when he was bored and left to roam the house, he warped blinds and knocked over china. After a quick shower and a change back into his work clothes, Johnny returned to the stadium for the practice game. They implemented some of the new plays they drafted with varying levels of success. Coach Bruce stopped them to correct what they were doing, at times growing red-faced and blustery. But by and large, the boys looked good and Bailey took his opportunity to shine. Johnny left the stadium for the day just after 1700 with an apology for his absence tomorrow. Most were empathetic given the lie about Nona's surgery. Janet got home just after him, her car pulling up at 1731. She turned off the radio and stepped out of the car at 1735. The front door opened not long after. Johnny set aside the steak he'd marinated, abandoned the oven mitt on the counter, and lingered in the archway between the kitchen and the foyer. He watched her hang up her long black coat on the rack and pull out the navy blue scarf slowly from her neck, like a magic trick. Janet fluffed up her hair before she turned his way. She was dressed up, with earth-tone makeup framing her signature false eyelashes and layered voluminous curls straight from the salon. Her hair spilled over a brown-gold blazer with shoulder pads and a matching belt to hold up her oversized black slacks and the navy blue bodice underneath.
Did you miss me, Johnny?
You already know the answer to that.
Maybe.
Janet canted her head to the side and pursed her lips, lashes batting once.
But I like to hear you say it.
I missed you, Janet. Johnny confessed, slowly pacing toward her. She hadn't moved from the coat rack.
How much?
I almost couldn't stand it. It was like glass in my belly. Every time I started to get used to it, the blast would shift and it would hurt all over again.
Her lips broadened in a slow coyote smile. She shrugged off her blazer, dropped it onto the rack behind her, then closed the distance with rolling strides, slinking like a scavenger.
Their hands were on each other and they kissed until Johnny's lips tingled and every inhale burned.
She smiled lazily at him and reached to wipe off the tinted lip balm she'd left behind.
There's salad on the table. I've taken out the 1970 Chateau d'Yquem too. Janet gave him a megawatt smile.
The one from Costa Rica?
We always said we'd save it for a special occasion. I can't think of anything more special than tomorrow night. It's on ice on the table, already open to breathe.
You've thought of everything.
They stepped back into the kitchen through to the dining room. Johnny had already set their places, and a large blue glass bowl of salad sat between them, a bucket of ice on the other side. She poured them two tall glasses of the Chateau d'Yquem, and he doled out the greens. Janet smiled as she raised her glass and tipped theirs together in a toast.
Here's to you. You've reacquainted us with ourselves and shown me a facet I never even knew existed. This isn't the kind of lifestyle I would have ever imagined, but now that I'm here, I don't know that I'd choose any different.
And to you. I don't think I would have ever tried this if you hadn't kept pushing me.
They smiled across the table at each other and had a long swallow of sweet red wine. They spent the first few moments in charged but comfortable silence, quiet only broken by the crunch of salad greens or the savoring gasp of a long sip.
What'd you get up to while I was away?
Janet asked behind a forkful of salad. Johnny tensed and shook his head.
Nothing, really. Normal game season routine, for the most part. Cleaned up the house, though, top to bottom.
Janet looked around, only now noticing how spotless everything was. She smiled.
You did. Look at this place, all spick and span. Can't believe I didn't notice.
It's okay. You were distracted.
I was.
Janet purred, her instep suddenly tracing along his inner leg.
I wonder what distracted me.
Every hair along Johnny's spine stood on end, the back of his skull tingled and his skin flushed in goosebumps. No woman had ever affected him the way Janet did. Johnny didn't understand it. It was something chemical and had only gotten worse over the last year.
Were we waiting until tomorrow?
No, baby. Tonight's for us,
she said, her toes as high as his knee. Janet elegantly cradled her wine glass between her middle and ring finger and took a long, slow swallow, drawing attention to her lips.
Now tell me, what are you hiding?
Johnny's brows furrowed and he awkwardly scoff-laughed.
I'm not hiding anything.
Janet pursed her lips.
You used to be a much better liar.
Almost like you don't want to keep secrets from me. You've been seasoned to tell me the truth, haven't you, baby? Like a good cast iron.
He couldn't formulate a response.
His brain was between channels and set to white noise. Johnny's jaw flexed and he shook his head. He didn't want to tell her what happened, and he didn't know why.
It's okay. I'll get it out of you eventually,
Janet said as she speared a tomato and took a bite, smiling carnally.
I usually do. Now, go start the steaks. I need some meat to cut my teeth on.
Johnny readily complied, getting up to start the steaks. He put the cast iron under the broiler to heat it up and put a dollop of garlic butter into the pan. Once the pan was piping hot, he took it out of the oven, put it onto his stovetop's ready flame, and dropped the steaks into the brown butter at medium-high heat. Soon enough, he flipped the steaks to let the other side sear, then worked on the bands of fat. The smell was incredible. He brought them both out medium-rare. Janet didn't wait for hers to cool. They ate to the tune of silverware on ceramics and wooden heels whispering against slacks as they spent the rest of the meal in silence. After dinner, Janet did her best to extract the truth from Johnny. She lashed him to the bed, tying knots tight enough to bite his ankles and wrists, pulled the riding crop from under the mattress and swatted him until he had welts. When she couldn't crop the truth from him, she climbed on top of him. Her ride was domineering and demanding, done for her pleasure, not his. She stopped as soon as she liked, or whenever Johnny moaned too audibly, and raked her scarlet and gray nails down his chest, over his sides and hips. Sometimes she'd dip in to bite indentations along the ball of his shoulder, tug at his lower lip. She'd climax twice and left him high and dry. Janet pushed back her sweaty, tousled hair, smiling lazily.
You'll get yours tomorrow, or whenever you decide to tell me that secret.
She knelt at the foot of the bed to nip his navel and untied him, walking off to the bathroom to shower. Johnny laid there momentarily, staring up at the ceiling, breathing ragged. He liked the way all the bruises made him feel. He loved the sting of the air on his broken skin, even liked the way his blue balls throbbed as he came down from the high. Every pain was a reminder that Janet had been there. Every ache was a reminder that he was alive. but the high wasn't quite as lofty as it had been. Life wasn't as near and precious, and as he lay there, spiderweb cracks formed on the ceiling, one at a time, like persistent fingers against eggshell. Johnny closed his eyes and sat up, nerves getting the better of him. He laughed at himself. Ellen Ripley could face down in a nest of deadly aliens, and spiderwebs made him twitchy. Johnny covered his face, shaking his head. Then he finally stood and went to the tub alcove in the attached bathroom. Janet was out from under the streams, taking a moment to scrub her armpits. Johnny stripped and stepped in behind her, and she passed him his sponge, all natural, per Janet's insistence. He began sponging off, but Janet helped him, scrubbing over his bicep, pressing a kiss to his broken skin. He savored the mixture of pleasure and pain as the sponge mopped the sweat away. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be so rough," Janet murmured before she stepped under the showerhead. Johnny believed her, but he usually did. Janet was the first out of the tub, twisting her hair in towel turban and tying her body in a terry cloth wrap before she padded away. Johnny turned the water to cold and felt the throbbing pain of his recent abuse subside to a dull ache. He stepped out of the shower, toweled off his jaw-length hair, and tied the wet cloth over his hips. Steam fogged the bathroom mirror, but he saw where Janet's teeth had cut half-moon rings into his skin. He gingerly touched the indentation at his middle right pectoral, and when he pulled his finger back, he found it coated in something oily and viscous. Before he could really react or even get a good look, he blinked, and it was gone. A shade and nothing more. That was weird. But Johnny was tired, and this wouldn't be the first time he'd seen something out of the corner of his eye. For someone without much of an artistic outlet, he'd always had an active imagination, and it got worse when he was sleep-deprived. He'd just done a full day's training routine after a trip to the hospital, and he'd had a couple of glasses of wine. Huh. Maybe he shouldn't drink something that'd affect his liver and kidneys after what had just happened. He hadn't considered that.